Hey everyone, welcome to Truth, Lies, Shenanigans. I'm Neo Nix, and thank you so much for joining us. We've got a really great show for you guys. I want you all to get your questions ready. It's been a while since we've had a new installment of our series, COVID Chronicles, but tonight we have immunologist Dr. Alain Simard joining us to answer questions on the coronavirus. Also on Hot Topic, Liz Z wants to discuss the mass shooting in the Colorado supermarket. Johnny Storm is talking Nicki Minaj's father. And I've got a quick fire question about a recent revelation from Trump on his handling of the coronavirus. As always, stick around till the end for our game show where we'll be playing Truth or Lie. Now, before we get into the show, we've got to introduce you to our wonderful co-hosts, our professor, writer, editor, journalist, out of Washington, D.C., Miss Lizzie Ender.
What's up? What's up, everyone? Happy Hump Day Wednesday. You can add Sleepyhead to that title, to those monikers.
Long day for you.
Yeah.
Exhausted. It's been a long day. And I still have 40 first drafts of essay one to grade. 40.
Oh,
40.
Wow.
So I'm not a happy camper.
Let's see if we can make it more exciting for you. Keep you awake. Our rock star from the rock band Fallen Machine coming to you from Sudbury, Ontario, Mr. Rob B-Rock.
What's up, everyone? Happy Wednesday. Super stoked to be here. It's been a very busy, very productive week. I'm feeling the brain drain, but feeling excited. This is going to be a fun show. And tomorrow night, I'm going to be on the Nerdpocalypse with Micah and Jay. So they don't go live. But it's going to be recorded tomorrow night. And then, if I'm not mistaken, they are available the very next day. So we're going to be talking about the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, episode one, 3D printed homes, laser hair growth, bald caps, and a lot of other cool stuff.
Sounds very nerdy to me. Sounds very nerdy.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
All right. And then streaming from Atlanta, Georgia, college student, model, actress, and the co-host of Truth, Lies, Shenanigans, Unscripted, Miss Gianni Storm.
Hey, guys. Hey, happy Gianni. Hump Day. Everything's going good. I feel like I'm ready for classes to end. Luckily the midterm went good. I got mostly A's. One B in one of my classes. But yeah. So I'm doing pretty good, but I'm just looking forward to no responsibilities. Besides work, no responsibilities.
Yeah, you're probably pretty tired.
Can't wait for the summer.
Quickly remind people when and where they can watch you on TLS Unscripted.
You can watch me and Olivia E. on Instagram Fridays at 6:30 Unscripted.
Now, before we get to our quick fire, Liz Z, you were on another expert panel on inclusion in sports.
Oh.
Tell us more about what happened. It was I actually watched it. It was really good.
Are we blowing me up today?
Yeah, always.
I am a CU, University of Colorado graduate, graduated with a degree in journalism and English back in 1998, eons ago. And so every year, the University of Colorado, they have what's called an inclusive summit. And it's a panel where people normally in person come to speak. I spoke on a panel for them probably, I think it's been 10 years. It was in 2011. And I actually was a Hearst journalist in residence at that time. So I got an award for speaking then. But they came and they asked me to join the discussion for today's summit. And the topic was CU Boulder, sports journalism and broadcasting. And it was under the vein of, you know, being a minority, both myself as a Black woman. So I got the double-edged sword, minorityism, if you will. But, you know, I was on a panel with some former CU graduates, alumni. Charles Johnson used to be the quarterback for the CU football team back in, I believe he was there from 87 to 91, if I'm not mistaken. So these are people that I haven't seen in a very long time. We had a very spirited discussion about why we chose sports journalism, what we learned from CU that we were able to use in our careers as sports journalists, mm-hmm. and what it meant for us to be a person of color working in the world of sports. So it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
And you spoke about your experience as a woman in sports journalism, particularly noting that you were really uncomfortable with working the NBA. Did you have a lot of sexual harassment there, or what was going on with that?
Yeah, why were you uncomfortable? obvious reasons?
I think I was mostly uncomfortable. One, again, I was, 23 years old? And so when I first started at Sports Illustrated, they asked me which sports I was interested in terms of having a beat. I just left Colorado, so I love college football. I was kind of hot and cold on the NBA, like a fan, but never really reported on it. But they gave me the NBA because I was a young, kind of cute Black woman, and they thought that the players would be more likely to gravitate towards me than your average middle-aged white male reporter. And so I definitely wasn't prepared for that. But I also, at that time, I had never really interviewed professionals before. I had never been in a sports locker room before. So all of that was new to me. And I think I was very naive. I didn't have a good understanding of what the interpersonal dynamics would be between a young female reporter and these, multi-millionaire, 7-foot-tall Black men, if you will. So I had a few incidents. I had one player who kind of a little bit stalked me, showed up at my hotel room at the NBA Finals one year. I was in the media hotel, and everyone knows where the media stays. So, and back then, this was 99, if I'm not mistaken. So security was not what it is now. Like, you could just walk up, ask if someone's staying in this hotel, and they'll give you the name, the room number, everything back in the day. I had players, I had a jock strap thrown at me in the locker room. Wow. I had a guy in the locker room who accused me of looking at his stuff, like, very loudly, to which the locker room got quiet. Random penises are not my thing. But he was like, I saw you looking at my dick. And I'm just standing there like, is he talking about? I actually had to report. Like, my editor was like, you need to report this. But I think the thing that made me like really most uncomfortable, one year when NBA All-Star was in DC, actually. So I came down to cover NBA All-Star. Sports Illustrated didn't really do All-Star stories, but they were like, oh, we want you to go and we want you to get as many phone numbers as you can. I'm like, that means something a little bit different than if you're saying that to a male reporter. Yeah. If I go up to an NBA player asking for his number, he thinks I'm coming back to the crib.
Yeah.
I'm coming back to the hotel, which clearly was not the case. I did not date professional athletes. I never would. It's a conflict of interest. But it made me uncomfortable. I think for all of the sports that I covered, I was most uncomfortable with the NBA, but I got the most advantages, if you will. I did the most traveling with the NBA. So it was kind of, a weird dichotomy. I think things have changed a little bit because this was, over 20 years ago. So I think things have changed a little bit.
Yeah, and there are many more reporters now, female reporters, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I was often the only woman in the locker room. And you had, wives looking me up and down like, what's that bitch doing again? I'm like, bitch, I got a credential. That's what I'm doing.
All right.
I've seen fights, between the girlfriend and the wife that are both at the arena at the same time. It was a lot of stuff.
All right. Well, wow, I'm glad you were a trailblazer for women reporters, female reporters. But it's time for our quick fire question. Let's get to it. Donald Trump revealed on a podcast that he rarely followed Dr. Anthony Fauci or Deborah Birx's advice. So who in the hell was Trump listening to account for 1/5 of the world's COVID deaths, the most in the world, and double the next closest, Brazil? Let's start with Rob B.
Trump's ego did allow him to take advice from anyone more intelligent than himself during his administration, so he was getting a lot of bad advice from QAnon forums.
QAnon? Gianni?
Trump heard Dr. Fauci, but he wasn't listening to him. So there's a difference.
Okay, fair enough. Lizzie?
I think he was listening to his right-hand racist man, Stephen Miller. Mm. I think that's where he got a lot of his information and his guidance from. That little cretin, Stephen Miller.
I don't know. I mean, this may be the same person, but it might have been Satan. Who knows? But
it is the same person.
But I will say life is a whole lot brighter now that he's gone. That's for sure. Because,
it's a lot quieter. Like,
it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I wake up and it feels like a good day, right?
Oh, man.
So any chance that he'll ever own up to killing 500,000 people? Because, you know, responsibility goes on his shoulders, right? If you're not even listening to the top experts in the world and your country fails far worse than any other, there's only one person to blame, right? Robbie?
He's not very good at taking accountability.
Yeah,
so, I mean.
I feel like every president has that one thing that they're known for. Like, it's usually sometimes a bad thing, and this is them. I don't think that he is going to own up and be he has a lot of
way
pride.
More than
he's
one.
Very prideful. He's got way more. But this one is like in history, because this is like people are dying.
Oh, yeah, 555,000 deaths. It's like having a basketball team with LeBron, Harden, Durant, Steph Curry, and you bench all of them.
All the beasts, yeah.
You bench them, and you bring some D-League players and lose. And then, you know, and then he's saying, oh, well, it was LeBron's fault.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he didn't practice right. I didn't play him.
He's an extreme narcissist who has a black soul. So there's never going to be any acknowledgement or any taking responsibility for anything. He takes responsibility for shit that he lies about.
Yeah.
That's what he takes responsibility for. Mm-hmm. But any truths, you know, any self-acknowledgement, he's not going to do that.
Yeah. All right. Now that we've gotten the shenanigans out of the way, if you've never been to TLS before, let me tell you a little bit about it. Our hosts and our guests share their truths and opinions with you, call out the lies, and point out any ridiculous shenanigans going on. And on this show, we always try to have some fun with shenanigans of our own. The show streams live just about everywhere. You can quickly find us on YouTube. Just go to tlsshow.com or search at TLS Live Show across all major social media platforms. And listen to Truth Lies Shenanigans anytime, iTunes or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Now, it's time for another installment of the COVID.
There's plenty of lies and misinformation of coronavirus. So Truth Lies Shenanigans brings you the truth. Stories directly from the people that lived it. Frontline workers and survivors. This is the COVID Chronicles.
All right. And today we have immunologist Dr. Alain Simard here.
Bonjour.
Did I say your name right? I practiced your name very much. I tried to get it, made sure I got it.
I've been called alien. I've been called. I've actually been called because the A sound, Alain, is very hard. And because I worked in Phoenix, Arizona for 4 years. Mm. And on the phone, I remember this one day, there was a lady that I was working with was from Iran, and she kept on answering the phone and getting mad and hanging up. And I was working in the lab, and I was like, okay, what's going on, right? And then she's like, oh, there's this, someone's always calling for Allah. I think they're just pulling a prank on me.
Right?
And so basically, you can call me. You can call me Rob if you want, and I'll be
okay. Rob. Right. Well, speaking of Rob, why don't you introduce Dr. Alain Simard to the audience here?
Absolutely. We're very happy to have Alain here with us this evening. Alain is an associate professor in the Medical Sciences Division at the Northern Ontario School of Medicine in Sudbury, Ontario. He's a core faculty member of the Biomolecular Sciences Graduate Program at Laurentian University, holds a cross appointment with the Chemistry and Biochemistry Departments of Laurentian University, is an adjunct professor in the Chemistry Biochemistry Department of Université de Moncton, and as far as qualifications and training, holds a BSc in Biochemistry, a Master's in Chemistry from Laurentian University, my alma mater. He has a PhD in Physioendocrinology from Université Laval in Quebec, postdoctoral fellowship in neurochemistry from Neurochemistry Barrow Neurological Institute in Phoenix, Arizona, as well as developmental neurobiology from the Salk Institute for Biological Studies in San Diego, California.
Ooh.
So Alain's areas of expertise are immunology, neuroimmunology, immune regulation, myeloid cells, neurodegenerative diseases, inflammatory diseases, cholinergic systems.
So like everything.
Man,
so
and
just
animal
everything.
Models of disease.
Right? He knows everything about
smart.
Immunology. He is the best.
So on top of all this, he is a devoted family man, an avid cyclist, and overall just a really nice person. So Alain, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Alain.
So now, is there anything that you can tell our audience about yourself that we may not be able to Google about you?
Because there's a lot to Google, apparently.
Probably a lot, yeah. I mean, even though it was a long list that you just gave, it all sums up to one thing, which is, you know, a science nerd, I could say. Stuff that you probably won't find out. If you search up my name, you'll see quite a few different Alain Simons that are pretty prominent in the province of Quebec. But I guess one thing that you probably wouldn't know is my ambition, I guess you could say, and at least I think I have talent, but you know, others people could be the judge in music. I play piano my life, and the last couple of years I'll get out of the way, but that's an electric cello that I'm trying to learn how to play.
Wow, look at you.
Nice. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Wow, electric
nice.
Cello.
Very nice. Very wow. cool.
Yeah.
Is it hard? So my wife's trying to learn how to do a violin. She's taking violin lessons. Is it difficult?
Ooh.
I know
it's so I started off I rented a violin at first because I you know wasn't too sure which one I wanted to do but for me I actually found it too hard I guess for the fingers to being too close and I just you know couldn't get the hang of it too. So for me I found it a bit more easy it's still challenging though it's not like piano where you know, in piano, as long as you hit the right note, then you're fine. In the cello, if you're a millimeter or two off, then you're off tune. So you have to be careful.
So I have a quick question. So I know, I'm hoping you heard our quickfire earlier, right? Now, basically, yeah. I believe Trump is directly responsible for all the lives, not all, but majority of the lives lost, because it could have been a lot lower. But, you know, what are your thoughts, him choosing not to listen to the experts? Like, for example, if Trudeau was, you were the leading expert and Trudeau said, I'm not going to listen to you and do what I want to do. I mean, you know, what do you think about that?
Well, you want the long answer or the short answer?
somewhere in between.
Well, you know, I'll try to be politically correct. Let's say that, you know,
if you count all the strikes
that this man had, you know, has done in his term as president of the United States, I think he'd have enough strikes for a full season of a baseball team. you know,
we'll see.
To me, it you know, it's just mind-boggling. I can't even begin to understand, you know, how or where this guy come from, basically. It's like, it just doesn't make any sense. And it makes me both angry and sad at the same time, you know, that someone could have such disregard for life. Because his decisions are, you know, as you pointed out, are directly, in my opinion, responsible for the more than 500,000 deaths that have occurred in the United States. These are all people that not, you know, obviously not all of them, but a lot of them would still be with their loved ones and families had the proper decisions been made earlier on. You know, had he been willing to forget about his ego and just listen to the advice of the experts around him.
The thing that frustrated me about that is that he boasted about the fact that he didn't listen to his advisor. I mean, when you look at, you know, like I say, 55,000, the next closest is Brazil at 200 and like, I think 67 or 87,000, something like that. I mean, that's the next closest country in the world. Almost more than double than the next closest country. And not to mention, they're like double the next closest country to them. So we're like triple or more than triple this third place. I mean, that's horrible. And I don't know. It just angers me.
It's what happens when you mix power and ignorance. You know, yeah. He was at the time for 4 years, probably the most powerful political figure in the world. He browbeat everyone in his White House, in his cabinet. So they were afraid, you know, to call him out for stuff. But also he is insanely stupid, but he loves himself. And so people like that, they're very toxic because you can never convince them that they're wrong. They're always right. Even though you show them mounds and mounds of evidence, there's nothing you could say to them that's going to convince them that they are wrong. Unless you lick their ass a little bit, you know, you got to stroke the ego a little bit. But even then, it's like he's not really going to believe you because there's no advantage to him to do so.
Did you have another question, Robbie? I'm sorry, I kind of jumped in there.
No, I do have several questions for LA, but I guess what I would like to ask is for those people who still refuse to believe that COVID is little more than a super flu, they really don't buy into the severity or the basics that you can do, like wear a mask to help protect your fellow citizens. What do you have to say about that, given that this we're a year into it, this isn't a new message, but people who are still adhering to that belief structure, talk to me. Talk to them.
Again, you know, that's another example where it's hard to comprehend. I mean, the evidence is so clearly out there. And the whole idea that this is just another flu or a severe flu and it doesn't cause more deaths. I mean, just look at the numbers. I think that within a few months, the U.S. passed the number of deaths that you normally have from the flu in an entire year. And this is taking into account the fact that a lot of places, well, not so much in the States, but a lot of places in the world were under lockdown, right? So we were trying to protect and still had, you know, more deaths in a few months than an entire year. No, it's not just another flu, you know, and then the whole mask, the refusal to wear masks, again, I think that comes from ignorance. And you know I'll admit that masks are not perfect. They're not
certainly
foolproof against the virus, right? But they definitely do offer a significant protection. And it's only, you know, it's the kind thing to do. You're not wearing a mask to protect yourself. You're actually wearing it to protect others, mostly. Yeah. You know, so you're doing this as a service to others and as a sign of respect that you value other people's lives. So to me, again, it's just not something that, you know, that I can understand as, you know, why there's such a refusal and it's such a surprising number of people that refuse to wear the mask.
So I remember after the SARS outbreak in China, you know, a lot of the Chinese people or Asian countries were wearing masks even after the outbreak had ended, you know, and it turned into like a stereotype and a joke to see people on planes. And, you know, it was actually very rude and frustrating. But, you know, it turns out that is what helped control the, am I right? That helped control the virus in those countries because they were already practicing some of those things beforehand.
Yeah, it certainly did help. And I have a feeling that, well, you know, hopefully over time, once we're out of this pandemic, that those stereotypes and, you know, the instinct of laughing at others for having continued to wear masks as a way of protection, that at least now maybe we'll see it in a different way. And that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in both our countries, if some people still do wear masks when they go out in public afterwards, because you do have some that are very aware of the risks and they're going to want to continue protecting him, doing the best that they can, right?
Real quick, got some comments online, and then I'll go to your question, Lizzie.
No, it wasn't a question. I was just going to say, I almost feel naked if I'm outside and I don't have it on. Like, I have it around my neck, and mm-hmm. I forget to pull it up real quick. I'm like, what is that? Air? What is that? Yeah, oh, put your mask on.
I got the same way. I was noticing that recently, actually. Alex Hung says, I think people here in the U.S. are very selfish and individualistic. Only think about themselves versus the community.
It's true.
Olivia says, can you speak on long COVID? I heard of prolonged loss of taste, spells, abnormal periods, chronic pain. Also, Paul Moose says, common sense eludes many. But yeah, can you speak on that? I guess long COVID, do you know anything about that? I know you're not a doctor, a medical doctor.
A bit. I mean, there's still a lot that we don't know, because believe it or not, it's this virus has only been with us for a year, and research can take quite a long time to allow us to understand what exactly is going on. And it's an interesting question, because we're actually submitting a grant as a group within the next month to look at biomarkers of patients that had severe, that were admitted to hospital with severe COVID, and then when they are discharged, that we could look at biomarkers and then try and correlate that to those that do end up getting long COVID. But we're still at the point of trying to understand what the risk factors are. We don't have a clear picture of that. All we know is that it definitely is a real thing, where people will suffer from a whole list, and there are quite a few symptoms that people can be afflicted with for a very long time, and it can be quite debilitating. It can completely change your life, and we just don't have a completely or a good grasp of understanding what exactly is going on.
Lizzie?
I wanted to just quickly comment on one of our viewers, Paul. He mentioned the common sense factor or element, or lack thereof. And I think that plays a large part into why people are so adamant about not wearing masks. They don't understand, which most of us assume is just basic common sense, but they don't really understand the idea of how much fluid we emit from unknowingly. Mm-hmm. It from our mouths, from our nose, even sometimes from our eyes, but we're not wearing masks over our eyes. But I mean, if you think about it, and you go out and we're not masked, you're talking to someone, you can see the saliva coming from your mouth, you can see the spit kind of spraying. A lot of people sneeze and don't cover their mouths, mm-hmm. don't cover their nose, they're sniffling, and that could be a spread of the virus. If you put a mask on, you are controlling that. You're all of that's going inward. It's staying over here. It's all up in here. And it's not getting on Rob. It's not getting on Gianni. It's not getting on Elan or Neo. And I don't think people take the time to think about that. Like Alex said, we're just so headstrong in the idea that the government is making us do something. And so now everyone wants to have a fit. And I'm like, asking you to wear a mask is one of the most basic and easiest things you can do. And yet we have all these people that are just losing their minds. So that makes me sad. And that makes me want to, you know, strangle folk. But then they probably have COVID, so I can't even do that.
that yeah, reminds me. What you said reminded me of something. So like I was watching TikTok, and Neil deGrasse Tyson said, you know, certain particular states in the country loosening their restrictions early is equivalent to having a designated place to pee in the swimming pool.
Yep.
I mean, it's just like when you're talking like you got all those people, those non-maskers just spraying all over the place. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just easy.
It also exposed how infrequently, at least here in America, how infrequently people wash their hands. You got it, Rob. How people normally were not washing their hands before the pandemic. And I'm like, who raised you? I can't even remember a day when I came, when I left home, and then you come back to the house where it doesn't matter if you just went outside to throw a bucket out of water. You come back in the house and the first thing my mom would scream, did you wash your hands? Did you wash your hands? Mm-hmm. And even if, you know, she told me to wash my hands the hour before, you better go wash your hands before you come into my kitchen, before you touch that food, before you do anything. So I'm just like, okay, maybe because I had a mother from the South, but I mean, we were constantly told to wash our hands. And so now it's just like, it's almost an obsession, if you will, even pre-COVID. Yeah. But I was really taken aback by the number of people who were just like, dang, I got to wash my hands. My hands are dry. What? Well, what were you doing before? Or ladies out there, pay attention. When we get out of this lockdown and you go back to a public bathroom, when you're in the stall listening to who's coming and going, pay attention to the number of ladies who don't wash their hands.
Oh, it's a lot. My wife says it's a lot. My wife tells me all the time.
Oh, Gianni, it is. When I worked, when I
was in
this building and we would go to the bathroom and I'm in the stall handling my business, you could hear people coming and they come in, use the bathroom, flush the toilet, go out. You never hear the water.
My wife tells me all the time. She's like, this woman left it. All the time. It's so constant. Gianni, did you have a question?
COVID running around. That's how we got all this.
Yes. My question was, so the thoughts, do you have any thoughts on the origin? I know that this was probably said already, and we spoke about this here on the show, but thoughts on the origin of the outbreak of the coronavirus and like who it came from or where it came from?
Well, thoughts in terms of like where the virus originated from, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, there were some you know discrepancies, or there were conspiracy theories stating that it came from a lab in China versus the wet market in China. I think that's what she's referring to.
Versus the government. Yeah. Tons of stuff.
Well, those are from as far as I know, those are all. Mostly all conspiracy theories. There have been some reports tracing it back to different. We're pretty sure that it came from animals at one point, but exactly to point the exact source, the original source, I don't know if we'll ever really find that out. But it would make sense if that's the case, because a lot of our the diseases and the pandemics that we've had in the past, that's where they came from, right? So viruses. Can be harmless to humans for a while, but go from one animal to the other. Then at one point they gain a mutation, and boom, it can jump to humans. And that's kind of like a part of the normal life cycle for viruses. So again, it comes down to, it brings up a lot of questions, right? In terms of sanitary measures and making sure that you take the necessary precautions and I guess what happens. In the examples, like where it probably started spreading, it might be in one of those markets, right? Because then you're handling a lot of dead animals or fresh and people can easily get contaminated.
And they were stacking like animals on top of each other. So if they would
live animals,
and they were right. And so if somebody urinates below them or.
So disturbing. Below them,
and it falls on one of the other animals, they get sick, and then if so they were all passing.
Exactly. So there I think there's a there's a big lesson to be learned there again, right? So but that's what my thoughts are. Can we say for sure exactly where it came from? I don't think so.
So I have a question, since you mentioned mutations, and we're running out of time, unfortunately, but so there are a ton of new variants out there, and I understand one of them is resistant to the Pfizer Moderna vaccines, and another one is now deadlier and more contagious than the others, but the vaccine does work with that one apparently, right? So are we like one variant away from being quarantined again, or even with the vaccines?
It's entirely a possibility, right? I wish I had a crystal ball to know for sure. But at the rate, you know, there are more than just a few variants that are going around right now, and there's probably quite a few more that occurred. It's just that it didn't benefit the virus, so it never became predominant, because that's the way it works. A virus will gain a mutation, and it can either make it easy, you know, give an advantage to that new variant, so that it'll be easier for it to go from human to human, for example, and then that virus will become predominant. And some mutations that will do the opposite, and then we just never hear of those because the virus doesn't spread. So yes, it's entirely possible that one of these new variants can gain another mutation, and then it can be even more problematic. What we do know is that some of them, and most of them, are more contagious, up to twice as contagious. And there are some really interesting studies going on, and some of them from data here or in Toronto, where at one point we had a mixture of the, I guess, version 1.0 of COVID and then the UK variant. And they looked at our lockdown measures on average and saw that it worked for version 1, where the numbers of new infections for that original virus were going down, but for the UK it was going up. So that showed us that the measures that were working for the first virus were no longer working for the variant, right? So that makes it more challenging, because all of a sudden you have to come up to the reality of acknowledging that we'll need stricter lockdown measures if we want to keep check, right? Because we're not at the point right now where we're not even close to reaching herd immunity for the vaccines. So that's problematic until we get to that point. And then later on, who knows? Yes, if they, you know, some one of them is somewhat resistant, it's not at the point where the vaccines no longer work, but it could get worse. And we just don't know if it will.
Again, people don't have an understanding of how viruses work either. Like pre-pandemic, I get a flu shot every year. And at times I've gotten a different flu shot because the virus mutates and changes. So there's a different strain of flu, but you have the conspiracy theorists. Well, see, that just goes to show you they're pumping a new drug into your system. You know, you're just a guinea pig, blah, blah. I'm like, do you not understand? And to me, because I am no scientist, I am no doctor, I leave that all up to you all. However, there has to be a basic level of understanding. And it's not that far-fetched to believe or to know that because of the environment, viruses change. You know, the same flu that we have in 2021 is not the same flu that we had in 2010. Mm-hmm. Not the same flu that we had 5 years ago. But a lot of people don't understand that. So that's going to make them more resistant. Like for this new variant, if it comes, you know, as a third wave, if you will, I think that's going to make people more resistant and just say, you know, F it. Like they're all full of shit. They're just feeding us, you know, a bunch of lies. So I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm not going to get a vaccine. I'm not going to wear a mask and, you know, whatever. And I'm just like, how do you not understand basics?
I do have one important question, because we are talking about the vaccines, and this was a more recent conversation that I had with Alain and his wife, respectively. But just as far as people having more severe reactions after they get the vaccine, or when they get the vaccine, could you talk to us a little bit about the findings you're discovering in that area?
Yeah, so having more severe reactions due to the vaccine itself is, in a way, it's normal, because that's how the immune system works. So the first time that you're infected, whether it's the virus or the vaccine, it takes up to 2 weeks for your immune system to build a proper immune response. And even then, it's going to be limited. And that's why we need a second shot in many vaccines. We need that booster so that... Mm-hmm. What that does, it'll give that boost to your immune system to react more appropriately and a lot more quickly. And essentially what we're building there is what we call memory, so immune memory. So we have these cells that are going to live pretty much, not necessarily forever, but for a very long time, and they're going to be ready. They're already going to be on the lookout, and they'll react much more quickly. So if you, you know, we have had reports of people with getting more symptoms from that second shot. And it also has to do with the way that these new vaccines work. They're quite different than the traditional vaccines that we've had in the past with this mRNA technology. And what it does is it mimics more what the virus will actually do, but it's not the virus. You can't get the infection, right? It's, you're not going to get the disease from the vaccine, but it'll mimic much more efficiently the immune response that we normally have. So it's a lot more powerful, and you do get that second more powerful response, and you'll get things like fever, because whenever you have a fever, whether it's to the flu or anything else, it's not the virus that's giving you fever. It's your own immune system. It's your defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at it that way. And that's essentially what's happening. And there are also some indications of, you know, people that get severe flu fever after the first shot. And what were people are suspecting, and they're studying this now, and I suspect that it'll be the case, is that those are likely people that were infected with virus beforehand without knowing about it.
They have antibodies.
So it's acting kind of like that second booster shot, even though it's your first vaccine.
That makes
and,
sense.
And, you know, so this is a hypothesis at this point. Yeah. But, you know, to me, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Last very quick question. This vaccine, is this something that we're going to have to take annually every year, or how long will it be effective for us?
Yeah. So that we don't fully know yet. We have some indications, you know, that the immune response seems to be, you know, so far it's continuing, and it can last at least, we're at like 6 or 8 months at this point. So time will tell exactly how long it lasts. If we base ourselves on past coronaviruses, because this is not the first coronavirus that we have to deal with. Typically our immune response goes away for the other ones was about a year, right? So there is a likelihood that you might need to get a booster shot on a yearly basis. And then the other thing that we have to consider are the variants. And if you do have a new variant that pops up and that it does resist a past vaccine, then we'd have to get a new vaccine essentially. The good news though, is that with this new technology, we'll be able to develop some new vaccines much more quickly than past vaccines. So it should be a very powerful tool to help us. Okay.
I'm going to get to these comments online real quick before we let you go. So Sherry Blaine Pre says, totally agree, and I will be wearing a mask always going forward. Jacqueline Robson pointed out we haven't had much of a flu season this year. Alice Hung says, same here, pre-COVID, I worked in D.C. and took public transportation. Let's see. Jacqueline Robinson said, the lack of common sense is bad enough, but I'm having a hard time with the deliberate cruelty and violence just because someone is asked to wear a mask. From your earlier discussion about women in the bathrooms, Jose says, women are disgusting. Lotion is a great thing. There are so many women at work that didn't wash their hands. It was disgusting. Olivia says, I will wear a mask in public, social distance, and not participate in large events post-pandemic. Paulette Bertrand said, I will do the same and was one of the first ones to wear a mask, respect distance, wash hands, etc. And Paul Moose says, new way of life. I'm embracing it.
Practicing acceptance is the best way to get through this.
Yeah.
You're not going to change it by screaming and getting angry.
So, Dr. Lansima, I want to give you a moment to just share any final thoughts that you have for us, and you know, let people know if they can reach out to you or and where they can find you.
Yeah. So first, I want to comment on the women are disgusting. I don't think that. I'd argue that men are even more disgusting. And I remember I did a very nice study at one point where over time, mentally, I would just keep track while you're precisely at the toilet and you listen, how many men don't wash their hands. And I had come up with a rough calculation that it was only 2 out of 10 that were actually washing their hands.
Whoa.
Okay.
Wow. Those are bad numbers.
Yeah. Pretty bad. Hopefully now that's going to change. So I think it's, you know, yeah. No.
I don't want any dirty COVID bugs on my junk.
I know. I'm so paranoid. You know, other than that, I mean, to me, it's, you know, I guess the message here is, you know, don't trust the YouTube scientists, right? You have to trust the experts, listen to their advice. And vaccines are only going to work really on the long term if we have enough of the population that gets vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So if we want to go back to a semblance of normalcy, I don't think we'll ever go back to what we were before completely. But at least if we want to be as close as possible, then we really need to get those numbers of vaccines up. It's basically our only way out, in my opinion.
Okay. Listen, we just want to be opening the border. We just want you guys to open the border again and let us in.
We're trying to visit Rob B.
We're trying to visit Rob and Jose.
Yeah, and same thing. I can't wait. Last year, we had to cancel our visit to Arizona to go visit our really good friends over there. So, you know, we're hoping for the same. It'd be nice if, you know, we're so close and so closely tied together that it's kind of very odd that we can't go and visit, right? So,
yeah.
All right. Well, thank you again, Dr. Alain Simard. And we will definitely try to get you back sometime soon.
Very important.
All right, sounds good.
All right, thank you
so much.
Thanks
for having me.
All right, talk to you later.
Yeah.
So that was an amazing discussion, right?
That was very informative.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you, Robbie, for bringing it.
No, that's all Alain. It's, you know, I work at the med school with him, and it was just like, hey, I know an immunologist. Let's see if he wants to share his thoughts.
He's a fun immunologist too, right?
He's one of those fun academics who has retained his sense of humanity, who is still grounded and one of the people, because we all know those brilliant academics who are operating on a completely different level. You're still talking to us. Please. We're still okay.
But you know what I wanted to ask him very quickly? Because he has
I can bring him back. He's still on.
Educational resume. And I just want to, like, how long were you in school, bruh? Like, how many years were you in school?
He didn't drop off. I'm bringing him right back in. He didn't drop off.
Question? Like, your resume is impeccable. How long were you in school? How many years of school?
All right. So I'll have to say, like, that, you know, the resume, a lot of those credentials were kind of, you could bunch them up together into one. But how long was I in school? Well, basically, I graduated from my PhD. I was 29, right? So, and I had a pretty quick PhD, just a three-year PhD in my case. So basically, in my 4 years of undergrad, 2 years of master's, and then 3 years of PhD. And then after that, 5 years of postdoc studies before I could get an actual job.
That's 14 right there.
It's a lot. But it was worth it.
A lot.
Again, we appreciate you coming.
Good.
I'm over you, Mom.
Thank you, Elaine.
You don't have to be ready on the
fly. I'll stick around and watch the rest of the show because I'm interested. So.
Cool. Maybe if I can. I'll see if I can. Yeah, okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. All right. I do want to get one comment in because my dad actually takes a lot. He's learning to write his little comment. So I want to make sure I get this in. He says, the virus does not recognize boundaries. That means no one is safe until everybody is safe. Therefore, we need some kind of standard global guidelines. He had a question. So what do you think the World Health Organization role should be? Unfortunately, we don't have time for the question. We're going to have to move on. Yeah. But I just want to make sure I got that in. All right.
He just dismissed his daddy like that.
I'm sorry. We just don't have time. I should have seen it. If I'd seen it earlier, I would have called it out. But all right. All right, let's time for Hot Topic. Let's get
Truth, to Hot lies, shenanigans.
All right, Hot Topics. The way it works, our hosts will share a topic that they're interested in. We'll ask, is it truth, lies, shenanigans? And our panel will talk about it for a bit until time is up. And then we'll go to our audience for questions and comments. So make sure you are commenting as you have been. in any of our comment threads. We are listening, even on TikTok and Instagram. All right.
I don't like that Tin Man. We need to bring Gingy back.
Gingy, you want Gingy back?
Oh,
yeah, I brought the Tin Man because he was shorter, but I'll bring Gingy back. I'll bring Gingy back.
Thank you.
Special request for Gingy.
He's got some better moves.
He does have better moves. There's no doubt about that.
He is smoother.
All right, Lizzie, we had another tragic mass shooting in your old stomping ground. Let's talk about it. Truth Lies or Shenanigans?
Yes. Unfortunately, truth. Unfortunately, you know, a very tragic and violent truth. As I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, that I went to the University of Colorado for undergrad. University of Colorado is in Boulder, Colorado. On Monday at about 2:45 Mountain Time, which is 4:45 Eastern Standard Time, a lone gunman walked into the King Super grocery store, which is right off of Table Mesa Drive in Boulder, Colorado, with, I believe, the caliber of rifle or weapon was an AR-47, if I'm not mistaken, and he went in and opened fire, killing 10 people, including a Boulder police officer. At this time, there is no indication of what his motive was. There are some reports from the family that he had some level of anxiety and mental illness. But this story, and that's not to say that, you know, the shooting in Atlanta from last week, you know, wasn't tragic or didn't hit me. But this story, you know, hit me personally because I lived across the street from that King Supers for 3 years, like directly across the street, like not even a 5-minute walk. I've been in that grocery store 1,000 times. And in addition to, you know, having that as my neighborhood grocery store, the bus stop to get to school, to get to the main part of downtown Boulder, is right in front of that location. So I was there all the time. I still have a lot of friends who live in that area. One of my besties, she is currently in Boulder at her parents' house. They live right on Table Mesa, right down the road. So it kind of hit me hard. And of course, you go through the process of trying to check in with everybody, making sure everyone's okay. And then because, you know, Boulder Police Department isn't the most efficient police department in the country. Remember, we still don't know who killed JonBenet, okay? But they really didn't give out, still haven't given out, a lot of information about what happened. So my question to the panel is, when does it end? I mean, again, this was the second mass shooting in less than a week. As it relates to Colorado, just the state of Colorado, this is the third mass shooting since Columbine in 1999. And I was in Colorado when that happened. The second one was at the Aurora movie theater. But this is the third mass shooting in Colorado where 10 or more people were massacred since 1999. So when does it end? When do you guys think it ends? Like, how is this becoming a story that's so prevalent and prominent that we are immune to it? Like, we just shrug, like, okay. They still shooting up, and, you know, this is an everyday thing in America.
It's nonstop. I'll start with Rodney.
One hundy, Liz. This is another indictment of American gun culture because, like you said, mass killings just don't faze people anymore. And how sad is that? And to really compound the point, I mean, we were just talking about the shootings in Atlanta, Georgia, and there's been 7 shootings in 7 days. This is insane. It happens at such a prolific rate that unless it meets a certain kill count, it's not even newsworthy. And all of these killings are newsworthy. And the reason why it still happens is the ease of access to weapons, illegal or legal, whatever side of the conversation you want to be on, I'm not here to argue that. But there's too many goddamn guns that are available, and it's too easy to get your hands on them. It's what I really can't stand either is that these hate crimes are being blamed on mental illness. And what this does is it simultaneously excuses the hate crime and it further stigmatizes mental health issues. It's while the root is the proliferation of firearms in your country. There's just too many guns, and there's more guns hitting the market all the time.
And I think also the mental excuse, and when I say excuse, I'm not trying to belittle anyone's mental health issue, because mental health is an issue in this country that we don't take seriously. However, this particular gunman, who, again, his family said they knew that he had some issues. Yep. He bought that gun. He bought two guns 6 days before this massacre. I think 2 days before the massacre, it may have been three, but I think 2 days before the massacre, his sister-in-law admitted that he was in the house with the gun, playing with it on the couch. And everyone kind of got upset, but no one did anything about it. No one did anything about it. And let me tell you this, I am kind of anti-gun. I don't need to be around guns. I certainly don't want any guns in my house, but I do respect everyone's right to have a legal weapon, okay? I'm not trying to ban all guns. However, what you're not gonna do is sit in my house with, one, a machine gun with a semi-automatic weapon, never coming into my house. But two, you're not gonna sit on the couch and play with it. Especially if you got some stuff going on up here. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand. Where is the sense of urgency if you see something like that?
Let's get Gianni in the conversation.
Where do you go with this? I think that because the federal government, well, the U.S. federal government doesn't have a registry or doesn't somehow keep record or track of like even mass shootings or, you know, gun owners and things like that. I think that is a major like key player into as to why this keeps happening. But I'm gonna disagree a little bit with Rob here in the fact that you said they kind of like say that it's more mental health related or mental illness related as to why. I think that is kind of why there's a push for more gun control and doing like the psych evaluation and things like that, because there can be, okay, me, a sane, I'm sane kind of person.
I don't know.
There can be millions of guns and it can be, there can be a million guns and it can be super cheap to get them. And I would have no motive to buy those guns if I didn't have something screwy or that's so rude. But you know what I mean? Like if I wasn't stable, like mentally, if I didn't have, if I felt suicidal or if I felt homicidal or for whatever reason people decide to kill. So I think that does play a huge role in this.
And also, again, you know, people always accuse us of bringing up race, but, you know, that's the elephant in the room here, because anytime, almost every single time that the mass shooter is a white male, you hear the mental illness excuse. You hear the mental illness trope. Let it be a black guy. He was a thug or a black guy or someone who is or Muslim
gang-related.
Or gang-related, terrorists, all of these other descriptions. The public, the media has yet to call this cretin a terrorist. Mentally ill or not, he inflicted terror. He is a terrorist. Yeah. But those are not the adjectives. Those are not how we describe white men in this country who commit these crimes.
Syrian.
Did I read that
I
he was Syrian
Syria.
Born, or is he his parents yeah, he's from Syria?
He's Syrian
his
born.
Oh, is
was he born here? Was it? Or was his? Or were his parents?
That's what I was asking.
It said emigrated from Syria.
Now think about this. And again, I lived in Boulder, Colorado. I know the culture there. There ain't that many brown folks living in Colorado, in Boulder, Colorado. I honestly believe one of the reasons why he was allowed to walk out of King Soopers half naked. Now, granted, they did shoot him, so he did get wounded.
He was shot, yeah.
But that was in the crop, like they were shooting at each other. They didn't, you know, specifically say, okay, I'm going to take this mofo out who just shot our fellow police officer. But
right.
I don't think they knew. He was of Syrian heritage, sight on scene. He looked like a white
right.
male. He looked like Bam Majera from Jackass on MTV. It wasn't until after the fact that they realize his cultural, his racial makeup, and they're like, oh, okay. And of course, the conservatives ran with that. See, he's not white. He's a terrorist. He's from Syria. Like, it's all ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I'm still trying to figure out why he was allowed to walk out of that grocery store alive. I mean, you know, you have all of these other questionable police shootings. And
they probably want to know a motive.
I'm not advocating for anyone to be killed, but if anyone's going to be killed, hello, there's a dead police officer right laying on the ground right in front of the store.
So I know
you would think that they just would have opened fire.
I know I'm asking this question as we have 30 seconds left, but I think we all agree the best and easiest way to prevent the sheer number of mass shootings is to remove weapons, right? Mm-hmm. But we do have the Second Amendment in the U.S., and if we're putting on our problem-solving heads, right, you know, how do we do both? How do we satisfy the Second Amendment and prevent mass shootings? Or is eliminating guns the only thing that we can do to solve this
problem? Well, one, the Second Amendment doesn't say that. The Second Amendment isn't gun-specific, if you will.
It's arms.
The Second Amendment, yeah, it just says
right arms.
Very good point.
It's just,
yeah, it doesn't mean that
it's the guns usually.
You know, crack down on a certain type of weapon. Like, I don't believe that the average American should have an arsenal of semi-automatic weapons. There's just no need for that. And I'm not talking about hunters. I'm not talking about, you know, military people. I'm talking about my neighbor next door. What you got an arsenal?
Some people collect them.
Exactly.
Some people collect guns. Like, some people collect swords and knives and things like that. Bow and arrows. Those are weapons.
But also, some people, you know, like in Texas, you know, they walk around with guns the way I walk around with pins in my purse, with ballpoint pins in my purse.
Yeah,
it's crazy. The gun culture is crazy in this country.
It is.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Right.
And I don't know how it is in Canada. I don't know if it's similar up there. Because if it's not, then it begs the question, why aren't Canadians running around gun crazy?
We have strict regulations. We have a healthy hunting culture, but that doesn't mean violent gun crimes don't happen. They do happen because legal and illegal firearms happen. There's a criminal element out there that will use them, but if they're apprehended, if we control the flow of weapons, if we reduce the amount of weapons that are being manufactured, it's a numbers game.
Online. Ton of comments online. I'm going to try to get to as many as I can. Daria Winter says, unfortunately, too many want to hang on to their weapons. Saima says, why are machine guns even needed? Having a handgun, I can wrap my head around, but this is not self-defense.
Right. I understand why
you're fighting a war.
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just want to point out, if we go back to the reason that the Second Amendment was put into place, they wanted to make sure that they prevented insurrection. I mean, they wanted to prevent the ability for the government to be able to control them, right? Or they wanted to fight it right back against the government.
It was a new country with no budget. They could not build and properly retrofit an army to oppose the British forces. So at that point, it was like, damn, give everybody a musket and they will be able to help defend the homeland.
Right.
So, you know what? Hey, if you want to tout the Second Amendment, here's your musket. Go ahead. You can take down something accurately from 15 to 30 yards away if you're lucky, if your balls are round, if your ammunition is round, if your powder charge is the right, if you've packed it down properly.
Also, I think we give the Founding Fathers way too much credit.
I totally agree with
you.
It is time to make some changes.
You know, I have students who were talking about this week, some of them are writing about the death penalty and the Founding Fathers and, you know, the Declaration of Independence. And I'm just like, you do realize, you know, even though there is a clause in the Declaration of Independence that talks about life, liberty, and happiness, that was written by, you know, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, who both owned slaves, both believed in the death penalty. Like, let's be real here. It's 2021.
Yep. Simon says, totally agree, Liz. Mike Wolf says, there should be stronger gun control laws. The problem is we've got some work to do on the police before we send them out to enforce the gun control laws.
Mike Wolf always coming with the truth. Mike Wolf always coming with the truth.
Yeah. Saima says, white is mental, color is terrorist. He is an Arab, Saima says. Darius says, I think family members have to be held liable for members of their family for whom they live. Talking about the family members not saying anything. Mm-hmm. Saima pointed out that he moved here at a young age. Alice Hung says he was white passing.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. They did not know that he was of Syrian heritage. There was no way they knew he was of Syrian heritage. And that fool does not look 21. Like, I call foul.
I never showed the picture of him, did I? Okay.
Oh my God, he looks older than me.
That's a rough 21.
A rough 21. My goodness.
A lot of amen, Blaze.
He was very paranoid.
Amen, Lizzie. Yeah,
he does look paranoid. I'll give you that, Gianni. He does look paranoid, which means.
But if you're a 21-year-old that immigrated to the U.S. from Syria, yeah, I mean, this Syria's not hasn't been a happy place for a long time. So didn't really leave of his own volition. He's a refugee, most likely. So that's just, yeah. That's a hard 21, but earned.
There's no affect in his face. He's not looking directly at the camera.
Yeah.
I can look at him and tell that there's something not quite right there.
You can see that. Yeah, you get the impression,
There's no excuse, especially if the family knew this and they didn't take the proper precautions. 10 people are dead.
Cherry Blaine Priest says, implement strong gun training, licensing, and screening in order to control the problem, similar to Canadian gun laws. And there's one other comment that I want to bring in.
From your dad?
No, actually. From Dr. Alain Simard. He had a comment.
Good doctor.
He had a comment on this. So I'm going to let him come in and say it.
All incredibly good arguments. And I think that it's such a complicated issue. But I've always felt from my experience of living in the States is there are some pretty huge social inequities and social injustice. Racism or systemic injustice that need to be fixed before any of these measures will help, right? Because if you get rid of most guns, which I think it's probably too late to do now in the States, because there are so many.
That's a good point.
But if you don't solve the other parts of the equation, then I think it might still be a problem as well. Right. So it's such a large picture, and I think it's going to take a lot of work.
Okay.
And that's where we keep talking in circles, because the government does not seemingly want to solve the other part of the equation. Mm-hmm. Like, we're still talking about this stuff in 2021.
All right. Thank you for your comment.
Exactly.
All right. I might bring you back again.
Thank you, Elaine.
If you're sticking around, I might bring you back again. All right. All right. That's a good. That was a great hot topic.
That was a good surprise. Well done, Neo.
A good discussion.
That's
guys.
A TLS first, people. TLS live first.
All right, come on, Gianni. What you got for us, Gianni?
All right, Gianni. So you wanted to talk about. Now we don't have a whole lot of time, so we're gonna have to speed through this one.
Quick.
But you wanted to talk about Nicki Minaj and her dad. What's this truth, lies, or
yes? So, this is truth. This is truth. Nicki Minaj's mother, I don't remember her first name, unfortunately, but Miss Minaj, has filed a civil suit against, in the death of Nicki Minaj's father, who died last month in a fatal hit and run accident. Sorry, last month. The $150 million lawsuit was filed last Friday against the accused hit and run driver. So the incident happened when Robert Mirage was crossing the street in Long Island, New York on February 12th, when he was struck by the vehicle driven by Charles Polovic, who was 70 years old. The man did stop and ask Robert Mirage if he was okay, but he didn't answer. Polovic didn't call for help. He didn't call the police.
So
he left Robert Mirage. Yeah, he drove off. Robert was taken to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead the next day, unfortunately. So now the mother of rapper Nicki Minaj is suing Polovich. The attorney of Nicki Minaj's mother wrote, "He was not only irresponsible and negligent, but more concerned about running away and hiding than seeking help." So my question to you guys is, do you believe that she should sue this hit and run driver for $150 million? Or how do you think she should handle it? Should she let it go?
Start with Lizzie on that one.
Are they still married?
No, they were not. They were separated for a long time. Nicki
but
was
they, but were they, did they ever get a divorce?
I don't think that they were married. I think it was more of like boyfriend, girlfriend. She got pregnant with Nicki Minaj and then they separated because her father was abusive.
Yeah, I remember the story about her father being abusive. I mean, but if they were never married, if they were not living as, you know, a married couple, then legally, you know, good luck with that lawsuit. I don't think you, now Nicki would have an argument as his daughter, as his next of kin. She would have an argument, you know, for being able to file a lawsuit. And people always get like crazy with the number $150 million. Oh my God, that's too much. Your lawyer always goes high. You're supposed to go high. Yeah. Then you don't get the $150 million. But you go high, like what's suing for $2 million when you're probably going to get half of that? So you go as high as you can. And then let the courts decide. But I don't know, like really because of all of the variables involved with her mom and her father and their relationship or what have you, I don't know how far this lawsuit is going to go. But I think that you are a horrible person if you run someone over and you see them laying in the street suffering, you jump out and you ask this person who has just been traumatically hit, are you okay? They don't respond. You don't call for help. You get in your car and you drive off. And they said he hit his car. He hit his car a couple of days later, you know, for several days because he didn't want to get caught. Like, that's horrible. That's horrible.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yes,
he deserves some punishment. He definitely deserves some punishment. Rob?
First and foremost, to Carol Mirage and Nicki Minaj's family, like, I feel for your loss. I'm really sorry for your loss. It's horrible. Mr. Polovich is definitely criminally responsible for leaving the scene of an accident and failure to report it. There's no doubt about that at all. Carol Mirage, I believe, is grieving, and she's doing one of the things that Americans do best. She's bringing litigation against someone. She's suing them. That seems to be another American cultural thing. I really don't believe that, like Liz said, like the $150 million, that's absolutely ridiculous. It's completely unreasonable. And this would absolutely destroy anybody. So, but I do fear, however, that because of the financial situation, that the Mirage family can afford better legal counsel than Mr. Polovich. This is a person, the vehicle that he was driving was a 1992 Volvo. Not a new car by any stretch of the imagination. So yeah. if you have a scared old man who's driving his car, hits somebody, and I am not condoning what he did, but I understand the fear response, going and parking the car in the garage, which may have not have been a normal thing to do. I'm glad that they tracked him down. He came forward, if I'm not mistaken.
I feel like he might have come forward. Yeah.
So he did eventually come forward. So his conscience did get the best of him because what he did was irresponsible and criminal. So he definitely should be facing all of these charges. But then for the Mirage family to ruin this person financially, there's no amount of money that's going to bring him back. And this isn't a family that's hurting for money. Nicki has been a top grossing recording artist for years. So let the legal system take care of Mr. Polovich. Don't worry about ruining him financially because what quality of life
probably
is there?
Probably doesn't have anything.
I just want to point out Naomi Nip 15 sent you some fire, Lizzie, while you were dating.
Nice.
On TikTok.
I'm gonna have to disagree with Rob.
I will.
It's not, as a victim, it's not my responsibility to care about the well-being of the person who has taken my father's life. And I've said this 1,000 times to people in my personal life. If you and I have a conflict, I am going for the jugular. I want to destroy you. And I will do everything I can to do that. Again, someone died here. And we know he's not going to have to pay $150 million. He's not. He's nope. not. That's just not how the court systems.
You got insurance companies. The current insurance company is actually handling his litigation.
Yeah, and that's not how things work here. Again, you go high when you make the when you sue, but you don't really get that. And I would argue, you know, he's a 70-year-old man. I don't know, you know, what type of estate he has, but mm-hmm. I'm considering, you know, what Rob said about the type of car he has. Sounds like someone who lived, you know, by humble means, you know, didn't live an extravagant lifestyle. So I think any civil suit, to be honest with you, against him would be detrimental, would be, you know, devastating for the family. So it doesn't matter if it's $1 million or $150 million. But we've also seen in cases like this in the United States where he might not be held criminally liable for what happened, where he might get off.
Yeah. That's...
And so I'm thinking, you know, I gotta go at him from all angles because he needs to hurt the way I am hurting.
But, I mean, and I will say they could have waited.
They could have waited what?
Till the criminal charges were done. I mean,
why? What's the point of waiting?
I mean, obviously that one doesn't affect the other. Process. You're right.
What's the point of waiting? That means that's neither here nor there. Get it right now. That's what we hire lawyers.
Do you mean to see like the outcome? Like if he was actually
to reach justice, you know, criminal charges would do that. Because my question was. You know, I think the bigger question was they have only charged the guy with, what was it? He's leaving the scene of an incident causing death and tampering with physical evidence. They actually haven't charged him with the murder, the death, or anything like that.
And those charges right there, that could be probation and a fine.
Yep. Yeah, that's nothing.
That's absolutely nothing. So, and you know, I don't believe in, let's wait. A lot of times the civil suit is because criminal cases take forever in the court of law. That's a lot why you see a lot of times people file the civil suit first because the burden of proof is less in the civil suit. Yeah. And so, yeah, I would have, you know, called my lawyer immediately. You handle this. I'm going to try to get myself up out of the bed and off the couch. Because I'm grieving and I'm upset. You handle this. This is what I pay you to do. Yep. Go get him.
I agree with Jacqueline Robinson. They will probably pay out the policy limits from his insurance. Liana Jones says, plus he still faces criminal charges. Isn't the lawsuit at this point too soon? Which was, I was mentioning that.
Nope.
Liana Jones also says, but it does appear they were estranged. They have the same last name. I think they were married, but it does appear that they were estranged.
Like Gianni said, I know Nikki has made several statements about, unfortunately, the relationship between her parents, how they were estranged for a very long time, how he was abusive, how she was always scared of her father. And that kind of drove her career because she always wanted to be in a position to take care of her mother and have her mother not be dependent on her abusive father.
I see Dr. Phil just jumped in on Instagram as well. All right.
Hey, Dr. Phil.
Hey, Dr. Phil.
All right. That's it for Hot Topics. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Jenny, for that. Lies, shenanigans. All right. We got to close it out with the game. We're going to try to make the game short, though. We're going to keep it short.
We got a lot of top friends on the show.
I know.
All right. So, today's game is truth or lie. I'm going to ask you all a question. You'll decide if you think it's a truth or a lie. I was going to try to bring back Dr. Alain, but he said he had to put his kids to bed. He messaged me.
See, that was part of the intro. He's a dedicated family man.
All right. So if you're right, you get a point. The person with the most points wins, gets the final thought. So I'm going to ask all of you the question. So you just answer the question, is this a truth or a lie? And we're going to find out together if these are truths or lies. All right. So more than 50% of men have lost their virginity by the age of 16. Is this truth?
Truth.
Or a lie? More than 50% truth. Of men. Okay, she says truth. What else? Plus.
Sad.
Truth, lie. Who says truth?
Sad.
All of you guys.
See, I'm going to say true, but I mean, let's be realistic. That's the number one thing young men lie about, so.
Yep.
Yeah, Lizzie?
I'll say true.
I'm going with truth. False. We are wrong.
Good.
We are wrong.
That is the number one thing they lie about.
I got a drink for me today. Okay. One drink for me. Yeah, we're really? All wrong. All right.
Wow.
He's drinking water, girl. He's drinking water. That ain't no alcohol.
Oh, yeah. You know, come on.
Come on, water.
All right. The world's tallest living man is 251 centimeters or 8 foot 3 inches.
I remember this. This is false.
February 9th, 2011. This truth.
Giantism. I'm going to say true. Giantism. True.
There was. I thought true. There was somebody taller.
I'm going with true simply because they were very specific about the date. And that is true. I had no idea. I was just only using article. All right. So.
And those people do not live very long lives.
Very long. Yeah. That's interesting, right, Liz?
It's the same thing with dogs. Yeah. The larger the dogs are, the shorter their lives are. The smaller the longer they live.
I don't know why.
The strain on the heart.
Poor Andre's giant.
All right.
My Andre Giant.
Yeah. So truth or lie, the exact translation of the origin of the word checkmate is the king is captured.
I don't know what is being said.
Checkmate. The origin of the word is the king is captured.
Check.
True.
I think it's true because check is for the queen and checkmate is for the king.
I'm going with false.
Checkmate is the king is captured? No, I'm saying false.
Check
I thought checkmate is when
the when game is over when your king is captured.
It's false.
Nice.
So, Gianni, all right. So, that's great.
No
so,
little test.
So I'm in the lead now at this point. Wow. Okay. This is great.
Lord, when was the last time that happened?
I know. I don't think I've done a. All right, you can hypnotize a snake with a flute. Truth? True or lie?
Truth.
Yes, you can. In India, they practice it.
I say that's.
It's not the music, my true. Friend. It's the movement.
I think it's false. I think it's false.
Oh.
It's false. Let's see. Let's see.
I think it's true, though, still.
You're going with true. Okay. It is false. False. All right. All right.
Where's
so,
your drink, honey?
Believe you guys.
This is the last one. So this is the last one, guys. So this I'm still in lead by 1 point.
Possible.
I don't know. I lost. Okay, I lost track. So I was, what are we all tied? I know Gianni's behind. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I have only.
Yeah, no. Liz and I have gotten one wrong, and you got it right. You are absolutely
yeah, I don't
in
think
the
I
lead.
Got,
by
yeah,
the
I think
way.
I've gotten it wrong no. yet. Yep.
Yeah.
See how the bald males cheat
all this,
one another?
All this cheating. All this cheating.
Yeah, who's cheating? Oh, who's cheating?
You got curly hair.
I mean, rethinking my scoring. All right, let's go. Let's do the next one. All right. This is the last. So Cleopatra is considered the inventor of the dildo. Is this truth or lie?
Cleopatra?
Queen Cleopatra?
The Egyptian queen?
Is considered the inventor of the dildo.
No,
don't
it just seems so random.
Mike Winter, you watching?
Right?
It seems so random. I'm going to go with truth because it's so random.
I'm going to say truth for sure.
I'm
going to
go with false.
I'm going to go with truth.
What do you say, Gianni?
Wow, I'm going with false, guys.
I just think it's so random.
What did you...
Let's see.
He is an ancient
it
agent.
It is true. Oh, what?
Now,
I'm looking this up immediately. There is no way.
They did say the dildo.
They the vibrator.
So guess what? Neo wins the game. Woo!
What? Neo, did you input these answers?
Shenanigans.
Nonsense.
All right, so I get the final thought for the game. This is awesome. All right. I don't know what I'm gonna say. I have no idea right now. All right, so I haven't done it in so
like
long.
You just
all
right, won
so
an award.
Let's get in some shout outs before we close. All right, Gianni, shout outs.
Shout out to Olivia E. We will be, I believe that I am still hosting this week, and if none of you guys are, I'm not sure.
Yes, you're hosting.
Shout out to Olivia. Okay.
You're hosting. I'm going to join you guys. I'm going to be
unless
joining
you. Unless
you
want to grade my papers. Unless you want to grade my papers, Chica.
Okay, no. Okay.
I'll be joining you guys on the spot.
It's too much work. So shout out to Olivia. See you soon.
All right, Robbie Rock.
Shout out to Nerdpocalypse. I'll see you guys tomorrow. And a shout out to my girl, Cleopatra, helping make the world better one orgasm at a time.
No way.
Lizzie.
Shout out to my Boulder, Colorado family. I know this was a very difficult week, a very violent week, a very tragic week. But Boulder strong, you know, Boulder strong. Boulder is kind of like a bubble, like nothing really happens in Boulder. And so a lot of hearts were rocked, but we will come back from this. And hopefully the pandemic will subside and I'll be able to come and hug you all and have a drink. Love you guys. Love you guys.
So my shout out goes to one of our OG co-hosts, Z, and her husband, Jeff.
Z girl,
absolutely awful year. I thought to definitely with you guys and hoping for a much better year going forward. We love you both. And if you have a business event or person you want to give a shout out to, follow us on social media, any of our hosts, and reach out to any of them on their social media feeds. We have a ticker at the bottom who can tell you how to reach out, and they may just shout you out live. And that is all the time we have. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. We hope that maybe you learned something, gained a new perspective, or even got some things off your chest. Please don't forget, we need your support. Follow, like, subscribe at TLS Live Show. If you missed any of today's episode, you can subscribe on YouTube, clips and replays. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or anywhere you listen. The next live show is on Sunday, March 28th. PM, Sunday, March 28th, 4 p.m. Eastern, and 1 p.m. Pacific.
And well, make it.
And don't forget, check out Gianni Storm, Olivia E, TLS Unscripted. You never know what they might share next. It is unscripted. They may even bring you on screen and into the conversation. That's on Instagram Live, Friday night, 6 p.m. Eastern. And our winner for the game show is Neo.
You can't even
Neo.
Say it with a straight face. You can't even say it with a straight face.
I honestly don't even know what to say. I'm going to close out with, I thank my father for joining us. I thank Dr. Alain for joining us. Dr. Phil
thank you,
online,
Dr.
Naomi for sending some fire. And everybody, we had Bert, Paulette, we had Jacqueline, we had Liana, we had a big crew tonight. See, Faima. So I want to thank all of you guys for joining us. And that is my final thought for the evening because I won a game finally. So. All right, guys. Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you, Gianni. Thank you, Robbie. Thank you, Jose, Olivia, for all your hard work. And I will see you guys next time.
Shenanigans.